Hi, welcome to another episode of We Used to Be Best Friends. I am your host, Sabrina. Well, this is not a new episode. This is actually a continuation of season 2, episode 2, part 2. We got 2-2-2s all around to give. This is part 2 of sharing my story of how I went through a very detrimental friendship breakup with a narcissistic ex-best friend. So if you haven't heard part 1, please go check that out first, and then I will meet you right back here. When things are meant to be, everything kind of happens in divine timing, like just perfectly. You don't really have to do much. It's just like all just the puzzle pieces just magically boom, boom, boom. It just feels like one of those things where you're onto the last puzzle pieces of a puzzle that you've been building, and then you finally find like all of the pieces and they all fit perfectly, all one at a time. That's like how it felt to me. There was a guy that I knew, let's call him Cash, and Cash was the person that I don't know, it was like random. I saw on his Instagram, I think, that he's like moving to New York. So I ended up messaging him and I'm like, you're moving to New York? He's like, yeah, I'm moving to New York. I'm looking for a roommate. And I was like, oh my God, I'm moving to New York. I'm looking for a roommate. So it ended up being like perfect divine timing where we both were moving to New York at the same time. And then I could like move in with him and he'd be my roommate. And he was one of those guys that was like, I respected him a lot. He was a very like good, respectful guy. Like he's not the type of guy where I'd feel uncomfortable with him as a girl living with him. No, he was a very good, respectful guy. And he seemed like he has his priorities in order and very clean and all that. So I was like, okay, this is good. And I didn't think that it would be a problem or anything. So he ended up kind of looking at apartments and sending me videos of apartments. And then we ended up deciding on one of the apartments that was like close to Midtown. And I just remember packing my bags and just going. And my parents thought I was crazy to just like up and leave. But you know, it was the greatest moment ever. Like I was like, I need this. I need to move to New York. There's something there that's calling me. I just know New York is where I need to be. I was also obsessed with Gossip Girl at that time. I'm still obsessed with Gossip Girl. I've watched that show like 3,000 times. And I was like, I'm going to New York. I'm going to live out my Blair Waldorf experience. Like I'm going to be an Upper East Side princess, which I wasn't an Upper East Side princess, but I was still like a Manhattan princess in my head. And I was like, I'm going to meet my Chuck Bass. I'm going to go to all these like Gossip Girl places and like be at all of these places that were filmed. It was just so exciting. Like, it's just so exciting seeing the places that you grew up seeing on TV, and like the Russian tea house, like walking past that, I was like, oh my God, like the plaza. Wait, no, not the plaza. It was the Lotte Hotel. Oh, I'm losing the name for it. The Palace. That's where Serena and Lily lived. I was just like, oh, and the Empire Hotel. I saw that and I was like, oh my God, Chuck Bass. I was a huge fan and I still am. I still go back to New York and see all the places and I get just like super, super excited. I was also very, very Blair Waldorf, like very Blair Waldorf, like the whole Audrey Hepburn and Tiffany's. Oh, am I a Tiffany's girly? You have no idea. I was like, I'm going to meet a New York guy and he is going to be getting me Tiffany's stuff because that's what I deserve. Like I was just creating and manifesting this whole life for me. So while I was on the way to move to New York, also my best friend was living there. So she was living there with her college boyfriend, the one that she went to our hometown with that I never met and that apparently hates me. That one, yeah. Let's call him Bentley. Yeah, let's call him Bentley. Okay, Bentley comes into the story a little bit later, so we'll move on from him for now. But either way, I reached out to my best friend. I was so excited telling her I'm moving to New York City, and she ended up helping me get a job at the place that she worked at. So I was like, this was like the best experience for me ever. I was like, I get to move to the place I've always wanted to live, New York City. I get to like hang out with my best friend. I get to work with my best friend. Like I get to go on weekends with my best friend. Like I made sure to have the same day off as her so that we could like just be frolicking around New York and doing all crazy kinds of things. I was just so excited. Like this was going to be the best time of my life. So during the first few days of employment, there was one day where there was a training for all employees and everyone had to go. And that was the first time I laid eyes on my boyfriend. I'm going to call him Nate for the story, even though I don't have to like not use a fake name. I just want to use the name Nate because I like that name. Nathaniel Archibald, because he kind of looks like him a little bit. Not really. I might be lying. He's gorgeous in my eyes, so that's all that matters. Well, that was the first day I laid my eyes on Nate, and I just knew. I don't know how to explain that feeling. I just knew that's him. There was no shadow of a doubt at all. I just had this feeling, and it was a peaceful feeling. It wasn't like a butterflies in your stomach type of feeling. It was just like you, like familiar, like I knew him, and it was calm, and that's it. I just knew he was the one for me. I remember telling Serena about Nate and just like telling her how I think he's gorgeous. I think he's really cute. And she was egging me on. She was like, go for it. You should go for it. You should go for it. Honestly, now that I think about this, I find it so weird that she was the one that was egging me on. And then the way she behaved later down the line just like doesn't make sense. So the only way that I can make sense of it is that she was pushing me to like date him, probably hoping and wishing that he would like reject me. So that's the only way I can make sense of like everything that has happened and why at first she was like egging me on and then later down the line she like her entire demeanor changes. But yeah, that's the only way I can possibly make sense of what was happening. Well, since she was basically telling me like go for it, I did end up going for him, and I did like end up flirting with him and everything, and we ended up, you know, it was drunk bar night making out, all that stuff. It wasn't my finest hour, but I really, really liked him and I really, really wanted to be with him. So I ended up making that happen. And then after that bar night, everything, he ended up asking me out on a real date, like a week later or something like that. Okay, I'm going to put a little bit of pause on that and I'm going to backtrack a little bit to give you a little bit more information on what was happening between Serena and Bentley at that time. So Serena and Bentley were living together at that time. At that time, they were probably dating for like five years. And while they were dating for 5 years, I did meet him once. And that was on one of my first or second trip to New York while I was like looking around at New York. I think it was my second trip. And my flight got canceled because of snow. So I didn't have anywhere to stay. So I messaged Serena and I was like, hey, can I just crash on your couch until like 6 o'clock in the morning? Because that's when they put my next flight. And she was like, yeah, okay, come over. So I ended up going to their place where she lived with Bentley. And I just remember walking in, sitting down on the couch, and Bentley was just like asking me questions, but it wasn't like normal. It was like he was sussing me out. Like he was like really like interrogating me. And it was strange because I was like, why does this man feel the need to interrogate me when this is the first time he's met me? I was like a little weirded out by like the interrogation stuff. And it was like as if he was trying to see if he's gonna catch me in a lie or something. Like I did not understand what was going on there. I was just like, this is a little strange, very strange first impression with you, sir, but okay. Didn't think much of it, and I ended up like leaving the next morning anyway. But also during that New York trip, Serena was like, she was hanging out with me and the friends that I came with. But anytime like he would text her and that he's home, she'd just end up like ditching all of us and leaving, which I also thought was weird. But it also fed into the narrative in my head that this man was like controlling, because that's what I pretended to think in my head, or at least the narrative I created. I don't know this man. I don't know if he was controlling or not. I had no idea like what was going on between them. So who knows? I just know Bentley was really, really rich from a really, really like high-end family, like to the point of like high-end family where they have access to the app for the, what's it called? The Empire State Building, to change the colors on that. Like, apparently he had access to that. That's how high-end this family is. So, like, he's coming. Bentley is from, yeah, huge, huge family. And I remember Serena telling me about how he's going to propose, because she found, like, pamphlets of, like, rings and stuff like that. So I was, like, super excited for her. And that she thought it was going to happen during a vacation in Greece. But it didn't happen in the vacation in Greece. And then I vaguely remember her saying that he, for the first time ever, is asking her to pay for her portion of Greece. And I just remember that she was like super annoyed about that, because she always told me that he paid for everything, and that this was strange, that this is like the first time ever that he's asked her to like pay for vacation, or like her portion of it. At least that's what she was telling me. I don't know. So I didn't understand the dynamic there. And on top of that, I don't know if she was like disappointed that he didn't propose to her, and like it was weird that he's suddenly asking her for her share of the whatever, but she wasn't telling me like what happened there, or if anything happened. Like, there was like no information whatsoever. Also, again, part of me is a little regretful that I'm that type of person that does not pry into people's lives, because I would have gotten probably a lot more information if I would have asked more questions. But I'm also the type of person that like I don't deal with people's business. If you want to tell me something, you are free to tell me something, but I'm not going to be like in your business prying, which I wish I did sometimes. So a few weeks after moving to New York, this is when Serena comes up to me and starts telling me about Bentley and telling me that she wants to like basically leave him and not be in the relationship anymore. And I kept trying to ask her like why, and then she told me that he was apparently emotionally abusive towards her. And the moment she said those words, like, I didn't ask any more questions. Like, oh no, I'm not the type of person who's not going to believe their best friend. Like, I never thought in my life that I would think to myself, oh, maybe this girl's lying about this. Like, never would I think that. I would be like, no, my friend is saying this. Like, it's time to pack your bags and go. You're not staying in an environment like that. So I literally grabbed her bags when we went to her place when he wasn't there, and helped her pack her bags and told her, you're moving in with me. Like, you're gonna be in the room with me. I don't care what happens. Like, you're packing your bags and we're going. So I essentially aided and abetted in helping her ghost this man. So she ended up moving into the apartment I shared with Cash, and she stayed in the room with me. Cash and her were already like familiar with each other, so they already knew about each other, because I brought her around him a lot. So we would always like hang out, go party, like do a bunch of stuff and roam around New York City. So he was very familiar with her. A big thing that I regret doing is it was just such like in the moment that I did not stop and think to like talk to Cash about bringing my best friend into the apartment. I really regret not having a conversation with him about that, but I felt like it was like one of those moments where it's like my friend is telling me she's in trouble and there's no time to spare. Pack your bags, let's go, and then we'll figure it out later. That was like one of those moments, and it was supposed to always be like a temporary situation until she figured her stuff out. And I think things would have been differently if I just took the time to like think logically and think clearly instead of like emotionally, and talk to my roommate about it. And then later on, probably figure out that this is not really my place and this is not my problem, and that she needs to figure it out. But it was also one of those things that like I don't know. She was telling me he's emotionally abusive. Like, as soon as you use the word abusive with me, I'm like, uh-uh, let's go. Let's grab our stuff. Let's go. And I was very protective of her. And, like, I didn't want to see her get hurt. So she ends up moving in with me and with Cash. And we kind of end up just being, like, the three amigos, doing everything together. Like, going to parties, going to, like, the best clubs to party. Like, we were all around New York City. We were just doing everything together. Like, it was just the best time. And I felt like it was just like three of us hanging out. We were like the best friends. It was just so much fun. Meanwhile, Bentley figures out where we live. I think she gave him our address. I don't know for what reason, but she did. And he ended up sending like flowers to her, like apologizing, or I don't know what the flowers said, but it was flowers. And I just remember her kind of looking at them and just being very, again, nonchalant about it, like not a care in the world. Like, you just left and broke up with the boyfriend of 5+ years that you lived with, that you were thinking of getting married to, like never cried, never showed any emotion. Like, it was very, very strange behavior to me. But again, like, I was like, I don't know, maybe she's just like very good at keeping things in and bottled up. Like, I don't know what she's going through. But I just remember the flower situation. She was more annoyed than anything. She was just kind of like, ugh, I ghosted him. Can't he just get the hint? Like, kind of like that behavior where in my head I was like, it doesn't matter. You guys are together for 5 years. Like, does that not count for anything? Like, do you not, like, he's reaching out to you because he wants to know what happened. Like, and like, I didn't understand this, the mentality and how she was behaving in that moment. Meanwhile, she was like very quick to go on dates. But again, I was telling myself, like, maybe she's just like one of those people that was in the relationship for so long that there was a point in the relationship where she was just over it. And it's just like, she's already coped with it. You know how when you end a relationship, it's never at the time when you end it. It's always like you're over it like a year before or 6 months before. So that's what I was kind of telling myself, because like, she was quick to go on dates with people. And I was just like, I don't know. I was just, for me, I was like, this is a little too quick for me. Like, I think that's a little strange, but I don't know. I remember I introduced her to an Italian guy that we like all met at a party. And this Italian guy was like so into her, like super into her, was asking her out on multiple dates. And I just remember her being in Bryant Park with me. And we're also meeting one of my really close best friends. Let's call him Larry. Oh my God, he's probably going to listen to this and be like, I'm sorry, what? And his like, look, cute look. He's gonna say it in his like amazing flamboyant way of saying it. Larry. I can't even do it. But he's gonna be like, why are you calling me Larry? I'm so sorry if you're listening to this. I love you, but I cannot come up with a name right now at the top of my head. Honestly, I should call you Samantha because you give off the same energy and vibe as Samantha from Sex and the City, except you're a guy. But we love you. So maybe, I mean, I'll just keep calling you Larry for right now. But I love you, Larry. So Larry was there with me during the Bryant Park situation where Serena was talking to us and she had to go to a date with this Italian guy. And she was like not interested in him, but she kept like telling me, she's like, ugh, I don't want to go on a date with him, but he has like a lot of money. And I just remember thinking to myself, that is just so strange. Like, again, like, girls, you do you if that's like your thing. But for me, I'm just like, I don't want to date somebody just because they have money. Like, I actually want to like this person. Like, I actually want to have a good conversation with this person. If they have money, that's great. That's an extra perk. But it doesn't have to be like that. But that's just me again. I just found that a little strange. I was like, okay, that's weird. So I just remember Larry and I just talking to her about it because she was contemplating ditching him, like not even showing up, not texting him or anything, not telling him I'm not interested, like nothing, just like ghosting, like disappearing and not showing up at all. And Larry and I were like talking to her about not doing that. We're like, that's not a nice thing to do. That's like very immature. That's not That's not a nice thing to do to someone, to just like stand them up. So she kind of started laughing and going and saying something really proudly, like, I'm the queen of ghosting, like laughing about it. And I just remember Larry looking at me, and you know, when you have like your best friend like look at you and you just understand exactly what's going through their heads. Yeah, he was looking at me with that little smirk of his, and I was just like, don't even look at me right now because I will die laughing. So it was just like one of those moments where he's like, this what? Like, it was a red flag moment for him. And I just remember when we talk about this and the whole storyline, because he was there throughout the whole situation. He was that one person that like really grounded me and helped me. He was that one person that while everything was happening, I reached out to him and told him everything. And he was my rock, honestly. He really was. So Larry tends to bring up this moment when we have this conversation, because that was like the moment for him where he was like, all right, this is freaking weird. There's like, this is a big red flag for me. So I think that was like one of the moments where he started to realize like something's off. Meanwhile, a few days earlier, Cash comes up to me and basically tells me that he has a crush on Serena, but that he's not going to pursue it since we're all living together and he doesn't want to make things awkward. And I absolutely agree with him because I never signed up to move to New York to be the roommate that lives with the couple. Like, that was never what I wanted at all. So I told him, yeah, like, don't do that. That's going to make it awkward for all of us. And like, that's not what we want. I did end up talking to Serena about Cash and asking her about him and like just to see if she was like remotely interested in him and if he even had like a chance, if that was like gonna happen. And she ended up laughing in my face and just being like, he's too short for me. I'm not interested in him. I don't like him like that. Like, kind of just telling me you don't have to worry about me and him being a thing because that's never going to happen type of thing. So I was just like, okay, well, then it's only one-sided for Cash. He really likes her. She's not interested in him. So it's not going to be an issue. So I kind of like just left it at that. Meanwhile, I started going on my first date with Nate, and it was such an incredible date. Like, honestly, he dressed up so nice. He was like in a nice suit, nice button-up shirt, like good polo, and he was wearing this gray like jacket because it was like winter time. But he looked so like, it was like so well put together, but he looked so put together the way I envisioned like a date with a New York man. Like, he was like well presented, reservations for everything, like made sure everything was good, took me to a beautiful restaurant, pulls out the chair. And I have this small obsession with like New York City and movies. Like, somehow always in the movies, like the real New Yorker just knows the little ins and outs of little restaurants, like the things that are not on the menu. So when Nate asks the waiter, he's like, yeah, I know you guys don't have it on the menu, but do you have the chili available? I literally look at him and I'm just like, yes, he's one of those local New York guys who like knows the ins and outs of like restaurants and like is probably friends with the chef, like all of these little things. They didn't end up having the chili, which was sad, but he ends up like kind of ordering for the both of us. Like, I tell him like the little options that I want. So I end up getting like a chicken pot pie and he gets like a steak and I think mashed potatoes and some sort of vegetable. And what I loved the most was that he ordered the appetizers and we shared that. And when we ordered the entree, he was the type of person that would share. And I love that. I love that, like, if you're with somebody there, they want to share like the food that you have and you kind of like eat off each other's plate type of thing. I know that's not always for everybody, but for me, like somebody that is not selfish like that and selfless and wants to share is somebody I want to be with. So that was like a good, like huge green flag for me during that first date. And then during dessert, he ended up ordering a cheesecake and we both ended up sharing it. He like puts the fork in the cheesecake, ends up feeding me the cheesecake. I fell in love in that moment. I was just like, this is the guy. Absolutely love it. It was just so much fun. It was just, and it was also very simple, and the conversation flowed very quickly, and he was very smart, and he knew about a lot of different things, and I enjoy that. I'm very like intellectually stimulated. So I enjoy meeting someone and they have knowledge to offer, really just like knowing little things here and there, and I was just head over heels. And the very next day, I was like still super giddy about the date. And I couldn't wait to tell my best friend about it. Like, I couldn't wait to tell her how it went. I was just so, so excited. And this is the moment where things start to truly change. And you remember when I told you that when I told her I wanted him and I was like pursuing him, that she was like, go for it, go for it. Like, she was so positive and happy for me. That this experience right here was the complete opposite. And I was so confused by how she took it. Like, I go up to her, I'm super excited. I want to tell her all the details of the date. So I'm telling her about like every little thing, oh, how he's dressed, like he pulls out the chair, like all of the food, all this stuff. And she doesn't seem happy for me. Like, not happy at all. She's very quiet. She's not like enjoying the excitement with me, like nothing at all. In fact, she was like so quiet to the point where she was like, that's what he said. Okay. Yeah. Like, not excited at all, but also making it sound like what I'm saying to her isn't good news. So it was very, very confusing for me. And I just remember leaving the conversation, not happy, like very confused, not understanding why her demeanor changed suddenly, like not understanding why she wasn't excited for me, why she was like talking to me as if I was telling her he was like slapping me around left and right, or that he was like calling me mean names. Like, it was just very, very, very strange. And the more I started telling her, the more she started to behave even more strangely, like getting annoyed that I'm telling her about this, like huffing and puffing, rolling her eyes, just taking things that I tell her and then twisting it later down the line to make it sound like he's toxic, or that he did something toxic, or that the words he said actually meant something differently, and that it meant that he is using me, that he doesn't care about me, that he doesn't love me. Like, she kept saying those three things, like, he's using me, he doesn't care about you, and he doesn't love you. And she just like kept kind of repeating those. And I just felt very confused in the moment, because I come in after the date super excited, super giddy, and I leave the conversation with her feeling like, what just happened? I thought I had a great date, and she's making it sound like it wasn't, even though it was. And I was like, what is real? What is not real? It was just really confusing. And I didn't know at that time that that is how gaslighting works. And she slowly started to gaslight me, where I started to doubt myself and my reality and my experience to end up fitting her narrative that she wanted later down the line. During our second date, Nate ends up telling me, because he was going to go up to my apartment and he knew that I was living with Serena. So before we ended up going to the apartment, he did tell me, he was like, hey, I just want to let you know something so it's like clear between us. He did pursue Serena about a year before I even moved to New York. And he's like, I was pursuing her. I was interested in her. I did take her to like happy hours. I did take her out to lunch. We did have like drinks before work or after work. And I also dropped her off at her apartment a few times. But he ended up saying, she told me that she lived with a roommate, even though at the time she was living with Bentley, her almost fiance, her boyfriend of 5+ years, she apparently told him that she lived with a roommate, and he later on found out from other coworkers that she lived with a boyfriend. So he was a little put off by that, and he didn't really pursue her or anything after that, because she basically lied to him. When he told me that story, you know those moments when someone tells you a story and then finally, like, you finally find the missing puzzle piece and things just start to finally click and be put together? So after he told me that story, that was a missing puzzle piece for me. And then I remembered conversations that I had with her when she lived in New York and I was still in our home state. And she would tell me about a guy that she works with that she finds really, really annoying. But then in the next phone call, she tells me she's hanging out with him and she's going to happy hours with him and she got drinks with him and like it was a lot of fun and that she went to lunch with him and like all of this stuff that she's telling me. But then in the next phone call, she finds him annoying again. And I remember specifically her telling me on the phone, you need to move to New York and take him off my hands, which ironically is what I did without knowing that I did that. I didn't realize that that was him that she was talking about. I also remember on the phone when she's telling me all this stuff, like I found it so strange because to me, she's with her boyfriend of 5+ years. Like on a few phone calls, she's told me that they're thinking of getting married. Meanwhile, she's like going to happy hours and talking about a different guy and like hanging out with a different guy. So I was just like, I mean, it was none of my business, so I really didn't pry into it, but I just thought it was weird. Like to me, that's emotional, like cheating. Like you're going on dates with another guy, you're leading another guy on, and you're still telling the person that you're living with that you love them. Like, it's just like, this was very strange behavior for me. So I was just like, weird. But again, none of my business. So I didn't really like say anything or pry too much into it. What I did end up doing is I did end up having a conversation with her about what Nate had said, the whole roommate comment. So I just remember going up to her and telling her just like, yeah, so Nate said that he dropped you off at the apartment and you told him that you lived with a roommate on multiple occasions and you were living with Bentley at the time. And I've never, ever seen someone blow up like that in front of me ever before, especially her. I've never seen someone blow up like that before. And all I see is her face get super red, super angry. She looks at me and literally starts screaming, "He's a liar! Who are you going to believe, me or him?" And I froze in that moment. I froze. I did not say anything, but I was absolutely shocked that she started screaming at me. She like denied the whole roommate, saying the whole roommate thing, which to me, I was like, that's a little strange for someone to make that up and use that specific word, but okay. And on top of that, I think also being a therapist taught me that when people react in such a defensive way with being aggressively angry at you for bringing something up, it's usually because they themselves feel ashamed or guilty for it. So it was like her way of projecting that onto me. And I've never seen someone rage like that before. And it was just the strangest thing, like her screaming like that to my face, that he's a liar and that who am I going to believe, her or him? I told myself in that moment, I was like, all right, we'll see who ends up being the liar at the end of the day, because the truth will always come out. So I wasn't sure, like I was getting to know him and I was like, you know, maybe he is lying about this. I don't know. I don't know him that well. So we'll see. But something deep inside my gut told me he wasn't lying about this. And the way she reacted was like kind of telling me that she's the one that's lying about this and she feels guilty for the fact that she was emotionally cheating on Bentley with Nate at the time. After that, she started to get more and more irritated when, you know, I was going out to date Nate or to hang out with him or to see him or anything. She was getting more and more kind of like passive aggressive with me. When I tell her, oh, I'm going to go see him, talk to you later, see you later, she'd like roll her eyes to the back of her head and say things like, when are you going to dump him? Like, I hate him so much. I can't stand him. He's so horrible. Like just constantly saying a bunch of like negative things about him. I started to feel more and more uncomfortable telling her things about my relationship with Nate or like things that we did or our dates or anything like that, because it seemed like every time I told her something, she would bring it up later on just to like throw it back in my face and kind of twist it in a way to make it sound like he's toxic. Like I would tell her something and she'd just take it and run with it and be like, oh, well, he said that thing to you, and then kind of twist it in a way where it's taken out of context and made to sound like it's really, really bad, really, really toxic, when in context, in the situation, no, it's not. But she would nitpick little things and take them out of the whole story and like have a focus on them. And then suddenly it makes him sound like he's a horrible person. And it would spiral me in this place, because at that time, I did not understand what gaslighting was. I did not understand what I was going through. And honestly, it feels like a full haze when I think about it. I felt very confused. I felt like my mind was fighting itself. like trying to figure out what is real, what is not real. I felt like I should be on Shutter Island, to be honest. Like, I felt like I was going absolutely crazy, that what I was feeling, what I was experiencing was like not real, because she was trying to get me to believe what she was believing and the narrative that she was creating. And it was just so confusing. And anytime I would kind of talk to her about that or call her out on that, she would flip it in a way where it made her the martyr. She would suddenly be saying things like, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to be like your best friend. I'm trying to like warn you and get you out of a bad situation, but you're too blind to it. You're not listening to me. And like flip it to make it look like she's trying to save me or help me from a relationship or a situation that I never needed help in the first place, and there's nothing to help. It's completely normal. In fact, I think at that time, I'm the poster child of like being in a narcissistic relationship. Didn't know that that was part of being in a friendship too. I didn't know that those exist in friendships, but I experienced it in a romantic relationship with my ex-fiance. I knew what that looked like. And Nate was the complete opposite of that, because I was finally choosing the right people. I was like, I'm not going back there. I'm not going back and choosing the guy that love bombs me in the beginning and then is never consistent with anything. Nate was that type of person that was consistent with everything. His actions and his words matched every single time. It was never those moments where, you know, you go out with a guy and then you have to wait 3 days and then you have butterflies and you're like freaking out if he's going to text you or if he's going to ghost you. It was none of that. It was always clear communication with Nate. If he told me he was going to text me, he texts me. He was like always on time. If he makes plans, he considers me in those plans. He considers me and the things that I like in the dates that we do. And it was always innovative, and he always made the date super fun and super like simple, but like beautiful too, like very thoughtful. Like, he focused on small little details. He is very much somebody that is reliable with their actions and their words. And he's not somebody that would say something that he doesn't mean. Like, I got used to being in a toxic relationship where the guy would immediately love bomb you and tell you you're forever, you're my wife, you're my soulmate, you're everything to me, I love you, blah blah blah, and like all of these beautiful words. Nate was not that type of person. If he said something, if he said the words I love you, he means it. He does not think that words should be like flown and just said willy-nilly. Everything he says, he means. And I really appreciated and respected that out of him. So I would start to get really, really annoyed with Serena, who's trying to convince me that this person is something else, when I'm literally looking at her being like, first of all, you don't know what you're talking about. You're like creating this out of nowhere. I didn't understand why she was creating all of this out of nowhere. Like, I didn't understand what the motivation was, what the purpose was, why she was so dead set on getting me to dump him. Like, she needed me to dump him. I did not understand why. Like, just let me experience what I experience and leave me alone. Let me do what I need to do and I'll figure it out on my own. And this is when things started to escalate. This is when she started incorporating my roommate into the situation, as well as a few other people that I worked with, kind of telling them little tidbits here and there that is not the full story, and making it sound like she's worried about me, making it sound like I'm in such a toxic relationship that she's trying to save me from it, and that Nate is like this horrible big monster, when this was all a fabricated lie in her Delulu mind. I don't know why she was creating this, but I would hear from other people that would like come up to me and be like concerned for me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they wouldn't really tell me what is going on, but they're just telling me like little things that Serena is concerned for me and like what's going on with me and Nate. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? Like, meanwhile, he got me flowers and I had an amazing date. I was like, what is going on with me and Nate? Like, what are you talking about? But she would go to other people and like give them little stories, little tidbits here and there to create this. What I didn't know at the time was a smear campaign. I didn't know that that was a smear campaign or the start of a smear campaign. But she started telling that stuff to my roommate, and my roommate and I were like good friends. So he'd be obviously like protective of me and concerned for me. So, and he's just like weirded out and is trying to protect me and is like not a fan of Nate. But at the same time, he's not a fan of Nate because he's hearing stuff from Serena. She's like whispering in his ear. And on top of that, Nate also kind of hurt his ego. So Nate is like graduated from finance. So he's like very big in finance. And Cash was like studying finance. So I think Cash was like telling him about something that he's learning in one of the classes and like talking about it as if he like knows a lot information about it. And I think Nate called him out on it and was like, hey, no, that's wrong. This, this, and this is what you're talking about. And that is what this is referring to. Like kind of just like telling him what is what. And Nate also worked in Wall Street. So he has experience and he knows what like all of these things are. I have no idea. Don't put finance on my like thing because I have no idea what they were talking about. But I think it kind of like hurt Cash's ego because it made Cash feel like he was wrong and that Cash felt like Nate was belittling him when Nate was not. He was just like pointing facts and being like, no, you're wrong about this, dude, but it's this, this, and this, and this. And then Cash, he's very like, he's also very ego driven. So he felt like he was like insulting him when he wasn't. But I also think he was primed in that moment because, you know, Serena was also whispering in his ear and telling him how horrible Nate is and how horrible Nate is treating me and how much she hates him, despises him, blah, blah, blah. So it's kind of like, I think in that moment, it was also priming. It was also like looking for the negatives. So that was like his moment where he saw the negatives and just absolutely hated Nate. And it's just, wow. And that's when the triangulation kind of started. Again, I didn't know that was triangulation until later on where I started to learn about these words and what these words mean. But at that time, I just felt like I was being ganged up on. I just felt like it was like two people bullying me from side to side. And I didn't understand what was going on. And on top of that, it was very confusing for me because nobody asked about my side of the story. Nobody asked about how I was feeling. Nobody asked me, hey, how do you feel about this relationship? Are you happy? Nobody asked me diddly squat. They were just creating these assumptions in their head and putting them on me and making me feel bad for being in a relationship because of whatever assumption they made in their head. And they were trying to like bully me out of this relationship without even putting my feelings into consideration or even asking me what was going on. Because if they would have asked me what was going on, and if Cash would have came up to me and would have told me like, hey, she's saying this, this, this about blah, 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 I would have probably told him that that's not true because she's, now I know that she was lying through her teeth. But like at that time, nobody was really having a conversation with anybody. And I understand it from Cash's point of view. Like I think he was so worked up and he was like protective of me and he didn't want me to be in a bad relationship. So he thought he was protecting me some way, somehow. What actually was happening is he was being manipulated and brainwashed by somebody's lies without actually coming up to me and asking me how I felt about the situation or what was going on my side of the story. Because if he would have learned what was going on my side of the story, he probably would have figured out really quick that Serena was lying about many, many things. Honestly, I don't blame him. I really don't blame him in the situation. Yeah, he chose what he chose. But at the same time, like, I understand what it is like to be coerced by someone like that. She is good at what she does. She is very, very manipulative, very, very good at what she does. So I don't blame him. I understand what it's like to really like somebody. And then on top of that, want to be like good favor with them. So he really liked her. And then she took advantage of him. She used that to her advantage to create this narrative, and he fell for it, and he was brainwashed and bamboozled. He was manipulated. And like, I get it because I was in the same shoes. I understand what it feels like to be coerced by this person. But once you start seeing how things don't add up and how like a lot of things that she says throughout the years are just like lies and lies and lies. And when you start to ask the people involved that she's lying about the story, you start to kind of put things into perspective and you realize what's actually happening. So then the roommate situation started getting a little bit weird because I think they were starting to date at that time. I don't know if they were like officially dating or not, but you know, Serena started being in Cash's room a lot more and hanging out and staying in his room a lot more. And it was just a little awkward for me. But again, I didn't stand up for myself. This is another regret that I have. I didn't stand up for myself. I didn't set boundaries. I didn't like tell them stop. I thought to myself, you know what, like maybe this will kind of get her to stop talking to me about my relationship. Maybe this will like, you know, calm her down. Maybe she's in a relationship with Cash and she's enjoying herself. Maybe that she'll like get off my back and leave me alone when it comes to my relationship. So I kind of let it be. So COVID ended up hitting and I ended up not being in the apartment with Serena and Cash anymore. I ended up going to another house that Nate and his family had in the Bronx. And we were just basically going there and it's a fixer-upper. So we decided to like fix it, paint it, and kind of just stay there. And it was a big enough house for the both of us. Honestly, it was the best time ever because me and him really got to know each other with living together and kind of seeing how we work together and if it's like a good couple, if it's a good relationship or not. So we kind of stayed together during COVID. We were like the COVID couple, and that's how I ended up being. Our dates were going to Home Depot for things to make sure that we had for the painting and for cleaning up and taking care of the house. And we also went to Target a lot to get just like random stuff. It's like pizzas and different desserts. And we were having a absolute blast. At this point, Serena actually goes back to Bentley. She goes back to Bentley's place and is there with him during COVID. So I thought that that was a little strange since she was getting very cuddly with Cash, but you know, I ask her about it and she ends up telling me that it's because he told her that he's suicidal. And that's why she's going over there to basically make sure that he's okay. Knowing what I know now, I don't believe that that's true, especially the way she was treating me a lot of the time. She was always trying to paint herself as the martyr, as somebody that she's like trying to help me when I never really needed help in my relationship. But she always painted herself as like the savior, the martyr, trying to help someone. So I don't necessarily believe that's true. I don't know. Like, I'm not in contact with Bentley, so I kind of do wish I was in contact with Bentley so I can ask him questions, so I can like put the pieces together and put the pieces straight, and also kind of find out what she said about me. But I now thinking about it, I don't think that what she was saying was true. I did end up inviting her on multiple occasions to hang out with Nate and I during that time, which she did. She went with us to hiking a bunch of times. She like hung out with us on multiple occasions, even coming over to the house for like barbecues and stuff. The barbecue day really does stand out to me the most because this whole time she's been telling me she hates Nate. She can't stand Nate. She's trying so hard to get me to break up with him. All of this stuff. So when COVID happens, like, I don't really hear that much about that anymore. And I'm kind of grateful. I'm like, okay, maybe it's back to normal. Maybe I have my best friend back. Maybe everything is cool between us. Like, she's not saying these incredibly ludicrous things anymore. So I ended up inviting her to multiple things such as hiking and like hanging out and doing different things and coming over to do the barbecue. And this time with the barbecue was a time that Cash wasn't around. So it was just me, her, and Nate. And this was the first time ever that I like really started to pay attention to how she was behaving around Nate. And she just was laughing and giggling and just having a good time. Just like, oh my God, like just really laughing at his jokes, really participating in the conversation. And now that I'm in the place that I am now and I've learned everything that I have learned, I understand now that she was baiting him, that she was purposely flirting with him in front of me to see if he'd flirt back with her in front of me. But Nate is a golden retriever. I love him so much. And he loves me. And he's so attentive towards me. And I remember that day, he always came up to me and gave me a kiss on the cheek right in front of her. He'd always ask me if I wanted something to drink or extra food, like very, very attentive. So I know he's not going to fall for that. He doesn't even realize that that's what was happening, but I caught on to it. So because right after that whole thing happened, right after she was like giggling, laughing, flirting with him right in front of me, and he didn't fall for the trap, he ended up driving us back to the apartment. And I think at that time she was like staying with Bentley, but then on some weekends she would come back to the apartment and stay with Cash. So I think that was the weekend she was staying with Cash. And we drove back to our apartment and to drop her off. And I remember I needed to go upstairs to grab something from my room and then meet Nate back downstairs and go back to the house in the Bronx. So I walk up with her, and that is when I notice her demeanor completely flip. She went from happy-go-lucky, hanging out with us, like laughing, giggling, all this stuff. And then we get into the apartment and she flips again. The rage, she started saying things like, I can't believe you forced me to come hang out with you guys, even though you know that I hate him. You're just a horrible friend. And I can't believe you're trying to force me to come to these events. And again, I freeze. Not very good. In a fight or flight moment, I'm a freezer. Like I legit freeze. And I just remember just standing there completely frozen and dumbstruck and confused. And I just remember thinking to myself, literally not even half an hour ago, you were laughing and giggling with all of us as if everything is great. And now you're screaming at me, telling you that I'm a horrible friend for forcing you to come to these hangouts and these events. I never forced you to do anything. Like, I've invited you a few times during like COVID. I've invited Cash to come with us hiking. Like, I've invited you to come hiking a few times. Like, and you're more than welcome to say no. No one forced you to do any of that. On top of that, like, is the one driving us to all these places. So, like, I'm just like completely just shocked by the complete change of behavior. Complete change. I end up leaving like really, really confused. And I don't really understand what is going on, what is happening, and why she would just like absolutely have this mental flip and start talking to me like that and screaming to my face. But here's the thing. When all of these things happened, it was always me and her alone. So no one ever heard any time when she behaved that way. Never. So I just felt like I'm in this place where if I tell anybody, they're not going to believe me. Because first of all, they're not going to believe me because she has such a beautiful outer demeanor to everybody. The way she behaves in front of everybody is always so friendly and so nice and so welcoming. And she also puts off this facade of being like super ditzy and clumsy and super like la-di-da and like plays dumb a lot. And I didn't understand that this behavior and the way she behaved with me was how she used weaponized incompetence to her benefit, how she used plausible deniability to her benefit, because it doesn't matter who I tell this story to or what happened to me, like, how am I going to prove it? I don't have cameras. I wish I had cameras. I wish I was recording every single conversation with her and me. I wish I had like a camera on my chest the whole way through, because then finally somebody would see it. Someone would believe it. But I felt like I was really alone in the situation because I was going through it on my own. I didn't understand what I was going through. And on top of that, everyone saw this facade of who she is, like this fake person of who she is, that who is going to believe me? Who is going to ever think to themselves that this sweet little nice innocent person who looks like she would never hurt a fly is screaming at me, Sabrina? And everyone sees me as like a Blair Waldorf, you know, someone that would stand, like, say something, or someone that is like strong. So who would believe that I was being mishandled and treated that way? No one would believe it. And that's kind of what I kind of thought to myself, and why I kept quiet for so long and why I didn't say anything. But these were the moments where I started to actually recognize what was happening. Not fully. I didn't have a word for it. I didn't understand that this was emotional abuse. I didn't understand that this was narcissistic abuse. I didn't understand any of that. I wasn't educated in that. But I knew something was wrong. I knew this was not normal. I knew there was something going on, and I don't understand why I feel this way. Why I'm constantly like doubting my own reality, and then she's twisting it in a way to make it all my fault. And I never understood what was going on. When COVID ended, or the lockdowns ended, and we're kind of like going back to normal as best as normal was, there are three instances that happened. And I don't necessarily remember which came which, but it just all jumbled together. The first incident was the Tiffany bracelet. The second one is my birthday, and I think while all of that is happening is the job situation. So lockdown's over, the free money is gone, we have to get back to paying bills, and this is New York City, so everything is expensive. So we go back to our old job that all of us are in, but we quickly realize that not many people, not many clients are coming out because they're scared. They don't want to go outside. They don't want to be outside. There's too many rules. There's too many like inconsistencies. We have 6 feet. We have masks on. We like, it's just very confusing, and nobody really knows what's going on. So we quickly realize that we're not getting as many hours as we normally do in order to pay our bills. So a lot of us end up kind of jumping from place to place to make as much money as possible. And the field that we're in is kind of like trainer. You're not under contract or anything. Like, you kind of can work at one place and then have hours at another place. Like, you're not forced to be at one place. It's kind of like just really a free for all. But the owners quickly started to realize that a lot of us are going to different places, and we're like training and teaching in other places. So they start panicking because they think that because we're going to different places, that our clients are going to follow us to those different places instead of that one facility, which isn't necessarily true, but they can be very paranoid with a lot of things. So the owners come out with this contract, right? And this contract basically states that if you sign it, you can't work anywhere but this facility, even if they fire you. So if you get fired for 2 years, you can't work anywhere else within a 6 mile radius in that same field. So if you sign this contract, you're basically saying that you're going to only work with them in that facility. You're not going to be able to work anywhere else in a 6 mile radius, which is like basically all of New York. especially for those of us that don't have a car. And, you know, it that is what it is. But the problem is, like, I'd get it if the contract was like, okay, you can only work here and have the hours here and only work for us and you can't go anywhere else, but we're going to give you a base salary. They didn't do that. No, it's just kind of like, you have to work for us and the hours you get, the hours you get, like, whatever. Doesn't really matter. We don't really care. And that's not very financially smart for us to do, because you're not paying our bills. If we're stuck, like, we sign a contract and we're stuck there, what if we get less hours and we can't pay our bill next month? Like, what are you, like, how, and we can't go somewhere else to work somewhere else? If not, we'll be like fired on the spot because we terminated the contract, or, you know, we violated the contract. It was just like a lot of things. And I sent that contract to my dad, and my dad was like, absolutely not. You're not signing that. Absolutely not. He's like, even if you get fired, like, I will help you with paying bills and everything. You do not sign that contract. So I promised my dad that I'm not going to sign the contract. And then I started kind of talking to a lot of my friends about it. Larry worked with us at the time too. So I started talking to Larry about it, and he's just like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is crazy. And I started talking to Serena about it, and she also thought this was ridiculous. This is crazy. And she started to kind of like egg me on and tell me things like, I'm not signing the contract with you. I'm standing with you. Like, they can't do this to us. Like, we need to stand up to them. Like, really just like having my back in that moment. And in my head, I was like, finally, I have my best friend back. Like, she's there. She's like, she's there. She's standing behind me. She's my ride or die. Like, we're going to do this together. We're going to stand up over this. Like, this is not fair to us. This is not, like, this is not cool, especially like right after COVID. We're all struggling here. So she's the whole time like, yeah, I'm not signing it. Like, we're going to just let it coast. Like, we're not signing it. I'm not signing it. Blah, 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 blah. Same with Nate. Nate also agreed he's not signing it. He thinks it's ridiculous. So Nate is the first one to lose his job. Nate is the first one where they let him go because he didn't sign the contract. So he ends up calling me and he tells me like, hey, I think I just got fired because I didn't sign the contract, all that stuff. So I'm panicking. I'm like, oh my God, like, I didn't sign the contract. Maybe I'm next. And then a few weeks later, Serena ends up calling me and she's on the phone with me and she's just like very nonchalant. Again, very nonchalant. Yeah, so they're removing your name from the schedule. And I'm like on the other side of the phone like, what? What do you mean? Again, very nonchalant. It was not even a big deal. Yeah, they're removing your name from the schedule. Like, they're just erasing it. So like, basically, they're forcing me to quit. Like, they're removing me from the schedule. So I'm like basically fired. Like, that's what it is. If they're removing my name from the schedule, I'm not going to get any clients. I'm not going to get any time, hours, none of that. So I'm panicking. So I'm starting to realize that I'm like basically being forced out, getting fired. And she is just like very nonchalant on the phone. Like, not, there's no empathy. There's nothing. She's just like nonchalant, like, yeah, they're just removing you off the schedule. And then I start panicking. And then I tell her like, hey, you need to be careful because I know she didn't sign the contract. And like, Nate is gone. Me, I'm gone. Now she didn't sign the contract. She might be next. Like, she needs to be careful, right? And I will never forget the way she answered me. She, like, again, nonchalant, no remorse, nothing, no empathy. She just like scoffs on the phone like, they're not going to do that to me. And I'm on the other side like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Why? And she's like, because I signed the contract months ago. And I'm on the other side like, you told me you didn't sign the contract. You told me you didn't sign the contract. And she's on the other side of the phone going, again, Sabrina, what are you talking about? I signed the contract. You know that. You know that. I told you that. And I'm on the other side of this phone call. Like, if this was a cartoon, my mouth is on the floor. I'm dumbfounded. I'm racking my brain, asking myself if I'm the crazy one, if I have just made this whole shit up in my own head, and asking myself, like, did I make this up? This whole time she's egging me on. This whole time she's saying we're not signing the contract. We're together on this. And she's telling me that that's not true. And she signed the contract and that she told me that. She never told me that. So I realized in that moment that my best friend has been lying to me this whole time has been egging me on to not sign a contract and did it behind my back, smiling to my face, pretending to be my friend. And I'm just on the phone, completely confused. I don't even remember how I hung up the phone with her, but I just remember the word traitor being screamed at the top of my lungs in my own head. My head screaming at me, this is a traitor. I was just shocked. And then there's this one day, I had to look it up to make sure that it was like the correct time. It was July 2020. And there, I had a small little argument with Nate. It was something that he said that bothered me that I did not like. And I ended up saying that to my best friend. And I really regret saying that to her because she like ran with it. She took that, she ran with it. She started kind of saying the same things. You shouldn't be together. He doesn't love you. He doesn't care about you. Like he's using you, all of that stuff. Again, and she got me to a point where I was like so riled up that I was just so annoyed. And usually he was meeting me that day. So we walked past him because he was waiting for me at the apartment. We walked past him and it was the first time ever where I told him, no, you can wait downstairs. I'm going to change upstairs and I'll meet you downstairs. Usually I let him come upstairs with me and like wait while I change there. But this time I was like, nope, you're going to wait downstairs because she got me like so riled up. So I got changed, went downstairs, and that's when like I had a full-blown conversation with him and I was just like really upset and I was telling him like all of the things that she basically told me. I told him, you don't love me, you don't care about me, you're using me, you're like all of these things, like all the rest of the guys, all that stuff. And he's just like, that's not true. That's not true at all. You're the person for me. You're the girl for me. And then he's like, you know what? He grabs my hand. He's like, let's go somewhere. I'm going to take you somewhere. And I was like, okay. So I get in the car with him and he drives. He doesn't tell me where we're driving. He just like drives and we end up stopping at the financial district. And then we end up walking around the corner and we walk right in front of Tiffany's. And at this point in our relationship, he knows all about the Gossip Girl, Blair, Audrey Hepburn, Tiffany's situation. He knows that I absolutely love Tiffany's and that is like literally like the most beautiful gift ever. So we walk in. First of all, I was upset because I was not dressed. It was summertime, but I was like in little shorts walking into Tiffany's. I was like, they're going to kick me out because I'm not dressed appropriately for this. But we still end up walking in and he looks at me and he's like, okay, grab a bracelet that you really like. Grab whatever bracelet you really like. I was like, whatever bracelet? He's like, yeah, grab whatever bracelet you really like. So I'm like walking around the lady and she's showing me all these bracelets and I'm like, wow, like all of them, like so beautiful. Oh my God, I end up picking this white gold one with like the Tiffany blue logo on it. Like I don't even know what it's called, but it's just like one of their regular ones, but it's white gold. And I end up picking that one. He's like, okay. Tells the lady, wrap it up, please. Wrap it up for me, please. So she like wraps it up in like the most beautiful wrapping and it's so pretty. And I have like the little Tiffany blue bag in my hand and I walk out like super, super happy. And when we walk out of the store, he looks at me and he's like, every time you see that bracelet, every time you put it on, I want you to remember that I love you and you're the one and there's nobody else but you. This bracelet is showing you how much you mean to me. So I end up going back to the apartment. I will never forget this moment. I end up going back to the apartment, walk into the apartment, the Tiffany blue bag in my hand, super, super excited. Like, oh my God, am I giddy? And I just remember Serena sitting on the couch, looking at me, seeing my face, smiling, then looking down, seeing the bag, and her face absolutely disappears. Like her smile disappears. She just becomes like livid, irritated, angry. I think she was sitting there waiting for me to come in and tell her that we broke up. I think she was waiting for that. But the fact that she saw me walk in with a smile and a Tiffany bag in my hand, she was so, so angry. I remember walking right past her, going into my room, and she follows me. and says, "What is that?" Like, very condescendingly, not really like curious or anything, just really like, "What is that?" Like, really annoyed. And I also remember Cash walking behind her. So he ends up being in my room sitting on the floor, and she's in the room sitting on my bed, and I'm walking into my closet, putting the bag into my closet. And I remember whispering to myself when I put the bag down that she's not going to ruin this for me. Like, that she's ruined so many other things that she's not going to ruin this for me. And once I put the bag down, I walk out and she's like already lecturing me. She's like, "Oh, so he buys you something, he's buying your love, and you're immediately back with him," like all of this stuff. And I just look at Cash and I just see him sitting there like nodding his head along with all the stuff that she's saying. And I just remember like tuning them both out and also thinking to myself, wow, Cash is brainwashed. He's lost. He's a lost little puppy. Like, he's believing everything she says now. Like, there's no hope for this anymore. And I just thought to myself, there's no need to really like defend what's going on in the relationship between Nate and I. If I'm happy, that's all that matters. And I just remember them being just like, her being really annoyed and angry with me when she left the room. Again, spouting some things like, "I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to like get you to see what's going on, but you're blind." And I just thought that was just so uncalled for. First of all, like, I thought it was uncalled for because the entire time she's inserting herself into my relationship and from the start tries to make it sound like it's horrible. Never even asks me how I feel about it. Never asks me about like my feelings about the bracelet, my feelings about the situation. No, she's just like spouting things and making it sound like it's true when it's not. No one's asking me how I feel. No one's asking about my side of the story. And I just feel like she's just ganging up on me, like she's bullying me into submission when that's not what I want. And I'm trying my best to figure out like what is going on here. She leaves the room and I close the door behind her. And I just remember calling one of my friends who's also a therapist that we work together. And I told her the entire story. And I just remember her telling me on the phone, she's like, "Sabrina, you're a very smart girl and you have a good head on your shoulders and you know exactly when someone is lying and when someone's not lying. You know exactly what's happening before it even happens. You need to trust that intuition." And then she ends up saying, "And also, you need to understand that not all friends want the best for you." And when she said that, I was just like, it kind of confirmed what I was already understanding in my head, that Serena was not wanting the best for me at all. And then she ends up saying, "Also, instead of paying me for my time, you can send the Tiffany bracelet over and let me wear it for a month, and that would be payment." And then we ended up like laughing on the phone. So I thought it was like really, really funny. But after having that conversation with her, I started to realize and recognize that my best friend didn't have best interests at heart. And somehow she had this need to insert herself into the relationship I had with Nate and somehow try to coerce me to dump him, to break up with him, because that was the end goal. She was just annoyed that I was in a relationship with him and she wanted me to dump him so badly. I didn't understand why. What was the motivation for that? Why can't you just let me be happy? Like, what? Why are you going to these lengths to try to like ruin this for me? I didn't understand. So I started feeling less and less safe with telling her anything about my relationship. So after that, I kind of stopped telling her anything that was going on. I didn't tell her when I went to see him. I didn't tell her anything about anything. Like, I kept everything close to my heart. And that's when she started changing her demeanor a little bit and started kind of being a lot nicer to me. Like, very strangely nice, like suddenly as if everything was great, even though it wasn't on my end. And that's when I started to slowly realize that because I haven't been telling her anything about Nate and I and what's going on with Nate and I, she's under the impression that because I'm not telling her anything, that there might be a breakup coming up soon, or we might not be seeing each other as much anymore. So I think she thinks in her head that something's going on between me and him, and she's pretty giddy about it. She was pretty happy until my birthday came along. Now, on my birthday, I wake up to like all of these balloons in the room and like this really cute cake. So in my head, I'm like, okay, everything is like back to normal, you know, like I have my best friend back. She's not angry with me anymore. She's not like yelling at me because I'm dating somebody. Like we're back to normal, right? Everything starts off great until I tell her my plans that day. Until I tell her, so the first half of the day I'm going to be spending with her and Cash, and then the afternoon is reserved for Nate. And I think this is the moment she starts to realize that Nate is still in the picture. And that's when she starts getting really livid with me. She starts getting really, really angry with me. And she's kind of saying things like, oh, why are you going to hang out with him? Like, I thought you were done with him. Like, oh my God. And he's now back in the picture, like saying things like that. And then she's like, I thought you guys broke up and you're no longer together. And then she's like, and why aren't you hanging out with people that love you? You should hang out on your birthday with people that actually care about you and that actually love you. And then she starts saying things like, she has plans for us. I have the whole day planned for us and I'm so excited. And you don't know what's coming. All of this stuff. And all of this was like really, really making me feel guilty for the fact that I have the afternoon planned with him. And she ends up basically trying to get me to text him and cancel plans. She's like, I have all these plans for us. Like the whole day we're supposed to hang out, like all these surprises, like just text him and cancel. Like, ugh, like he doesn't care about you. He doesn't love you anyway. Like you shouldn't be spending your time with him. You should be spending your time with people that love you and care about you. Like all of these words that kind of spiraled me into this place where I did end up texting him. And I regret this day. I really, really do, because I don't think he deserved the way I treated him that day. I texted him and I told him I don't want to see him, that I don't want to see him today. And Nate did not deserve that, because little did I know, Nate had a whole surprise for me later that afternoon. He actually bought us tickets to the spa called Air in New York City and got us like, you know, day pass, afternoon pass for that, and a couple's massage and some other treatments. So it was like supposed to be like a whole like spa day for the both of us on my birthday. I didn't know that because he kept it to himself. He kept it secret, but he paid for all that and he was supposed to surprise me on that. And I basically listened to this girl and missed out on an incredible spa day. But the moment that I told her that I texted him and canceled plans, suddenly things changed. Suddenly, I asked her, I was like, so what do we have planned? Because the entire time she's saying like, I have the whole day planned for us. You're supposed to hang out with people that love you, care about you, and have things planned for you. And I asked her, okay, so what's the plan? And she looks at me and she's like, I don't know. What do you want to do today? And that was the moment I realized that she's been lying the whole time, saying that she has a whole day planned for us and she had nothing planned, nothing at all planned. So on my birthday, I had to come up with something that I wanted to do with her. So I decided to do a photo shoot because I love taking pictures, and we ended up going to Times Square and different places and took pictures. If I look back at those pictures, I am so angry. I'm so angry in those pictures. Like, I look so livid in the pictures because I knew what I was doing was wrong. I knew what I was doing was wrong, hanging out with her and like wasting my time with her when like canceling plans with somebody that actually like puts in effort and cares about me. Meanwhile, I'm being manipulated and bamboozled to like ruin that, like sabotage that for myself because I'm listening to this person. And then what's even like the cherry on top is the moment we get back to the apartment, The moment we get to back to the apartment, even though she was saying that she has plans for us the entire day, we're going to hang out the entire day, that I shouldn't see him in the afternoon because we're going to hang out the entire day. The moment we get to the apartment, she goes straight into Cash's room, close the door, and I don't hear from her at all the entire evening. And I just remember sitting there, and it's around like 4:35, and I'm telling myself, wow, I could have been leaving now to go hang out with my boyfriend and have plans with him. And she's telling me that we're going to hang out the whole day. And she's meanwhile, like, giggling and laughing in the room next door with Cash. So I just sit there and I am pissed. I am angry. I am pissed. I feel like I just ruined this for me. I sabotaged this for me. I treated Nate so badly. He didn't deserve that. All of these things. And this is when Nate ends up texting me. And he's like, hey, I'm downstairs. I have your presents. If you don't want to see me, I'll leave them with the doorman. But if you do want to see me, I'll wait downstairs. Immediately in that moment, I knew I made the biggest mistake. I made the biggest mistake listening to this girl. I made the biggest mistake canceling plans with him. I run downstairs and I see him standing in front of his car, like waiting for me in front of my building. And I just run into him and give him the biggest hug and apologize. I'm apologizing. I'm telling him how sorry I am. I'm so, so sorry, like almost to the point of tears. And he just like grabs my face, gives me a kiss. He's like, it's okay. Like I'm pretty sure he did not know what the hell was going on, why I canceled on him. He had no idea what was going on. But he ends up kissing me, and then he grabs some stuff from the car, and it ends up being like chocolates and these beautiful flowers and this beautiful framed, I guess, sketch or painting. It's basically art, but it was art that he made. He basically drew a silhouette of me, of my body. And it's like this beautiful, like, piece of art that he drew for me for my birthday. He took the time out of his day to do and framed it and signed it and dated it and like wrote my name on it, and I still have it hanging on my wall to this very day. I knew in that moment that I had made the biggest mistake ever listening to this girl, and I needed to start to actually listen to my intuition and put myself first and listen to myself, because I couldn't keep letting this happen. After we said our goodbyes, I remember walking upstairs with all the presents in my hand, and I walk into the apartment and she's standing there in the living room as if she has like a radar for me when I leave the apartment. And she looks at me with not happy at all, like really livid and angry that I went downstairs and I saw him. And she's like, what is that? And like looking at the presents. And she's like rolling her eyes. She's like, you saw him again? Like, really just making me feel horrible. Like, really shitty. Like, I just experienced such a beautiful moment with like this beautiful present, flowers and chocolates and all that stuff. And she's just like scolding me. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? I don't deserve this. Like, why is she doing this to me? So I walk into my room and I put the presents down and I'm just like nonchalantly, I'm like, they're gifts, they're presents. And she's again behind me like, you went to see him, like I thought that was over, like blah blah blah. And I just remember tuning out, like really disassociating, that I don't remember the rest that she said. It was probably the same crap that she spilled all the time. I'm trying to help you, blah blah blah, when she's not helping me at all. She's actually making things worse. She's actually making my life miserable when she could have just left me alone. Like, just like I left her alone with her relationship with Cash, like, just leave me alone with my relationship with Nate. So not only did she try to sabotage and ruin the Tiffany bracelet situation, my birthday, and the whole job situation, at this point, I am, like, absolutely exhausted. And you think that that's it, right? Honestly, what I went through, I don't wish on anyone. I don't wish on anyone. I feel like I went through hell. Like, if I had to describe hell to you, this entire story, those year and a half was hell, and I was dealing with the devil himself. And the devil was pretending to be the sweet, sweet, innocent girl.
Wow.
I'm sorry, you guys. I know I might be laughing a lot at this, but this is the only way that I can cope, is to have a little bit of humor and to laugh about this. Because if I don't laugh about this, I'm going to cry. I'm going to absolutely break down crying because it's just unbelievable. And when I told the whole story to my therapist, it's like one of those things where, you know, experiencing it is one thing. But then when you sit down and you tell the whole story to somebody, to another human being, and they look at you with that face completely dumbfounded and are looking at you like, how in the world did you experience this? How did you get through this? And when someone looks at you like that and you realize that hearing it yourself and saying it out loud is actually worse than what you went through, it's as bad or even worse. That is one other feeling that I cannot describe. And I know what you're thinking right now. You're like, Sabrina, is this going to get better? No. It just escalates. It just escalates. It just gets worse.
Yeah.